28th of November, 1967. Medium of distress.
What is it?
How are you, Susan?
What?
How are you, Susan?
I'm all right, I don't know.
It's good. You look very good, don't you?
Please, fantastic, Susan.
No, I think you look very nice, you do.
Well,
you're all stiff, you know, all your posh clothes and things.
Oh!
Well, you do. You know, the people are going out to the theatre or something, aren't
they? Yes, they want to take people to the theatre.
Well, why don't you go and enjoy yourself? It would do you a world of good.
So
I don't think you'll look that.
Rabbit
hat.
Well, you wouldn't call it a rabbit hat.
Well, you know what I mean. I'll take you, but I don't see all these four walls.
That's all right, I feel safer.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
With the four walls. Anyhow, I have two cavaliers who will be wonderful.
What if you have another nice lady?
Yes,
yes.
You like her, do you?
Oh, of course I like her. She's a cheerful little girl, ain't she?
Very.
And she's kind.
Very.
And she's fond of you.
Yes.
Oh, you are, you see.
Oh, I'm so happy, darling.
Well, I'm very happy to see you looking so smart and nice and...
Oh, my God, I have to dress up every time
and
I come.
You've got your face covered up nice, ain't you? Well, you know, like you used to look like. You used to go up and go out.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, you never see you, but we make you going out to a good store, Miss Adler.
Well, haven't I come here?
You got your jewelry on?
Your jewelry?
No, only my watch and my brooch.
Oh, that's a smasher, ain't it?
Oh, you don't seem kind of have too much on. Where's
your posh earrings?
I don't know what happened to them. And get some new ones.
Where are your posh
earrings?
You know, he's a little rascal.
Yeah, I know.
And as I say that to you, that he's a little rascal, I realize that, in a sense, that is not again true. Because he's neither little, and neither is he rascal.
I know.
He assumes his childish self. In a sense, one might say almost automatically as he draws it unto us. Partly, of course, through habit, having to speak to so many people and cheering them up and brightening them and trying to ease the path for others who are less experienced. But
yes.
His pose, so that's what it really means.
Yes.
His pose is very important.
I
sometimes think that he could drop all that. Occasionally, on very rare occasions, he does drop it and he reverses his true self.
I wish to them.
Which I think is so much more illuminating and interesting because he's a very, very developed young man and a very informed young man.
A
man who, if he wanted to, could give you a great deal of information and certainly could be a great help. Not only to you, but to many people. But of course now he's become so accepted as this little good boy, little cocky boy, that everyone assumes quite naturally, I suppose, that as he should be.
Yes.
There's always this, of course, the big problem, and it is a problem with people on earth, that they anticipate that when a person comes to them, that they should come to them as they were when on earth. Partly, of course, the recognition, which is very understandable in the first instance of communication. You want that kind of proof, which can only come when the person comes there as they once were, as you knew them. But, of course, most people on this side, who've been here for any time at all, soon lose certain aspects of the old self. They regret and they become more wise. In the spiritual sense, they become, in some senses, removed obviously from material thoughts and conditions and ideas. They don't know to the state, of course, that they take an interest in people on earth that they know and love, and they try, if they possibly can, to be of some help and be of some service. If people will, of course, in communication, that is on your side, almost you might say, insist that the person in the council should speak in the manner in which they were accustomed to speaking on earth, and with that to material things, material problems, and talk about things that happened many years ago. All these things can be very informative and very important in the initial stages of communication, and they're necessary. But you know, so few cities ever realize that many of the people who come back to them to communicate are so anxious to sort of drift away from the material thoughts and ideas and talk about things which are much further than all things which are important to them and important should be to the people that they're communicating with.
Yes.
So many people hold, in a sense, these fixed ideas, and in consequence, the thought forces that they send out affect the communicator to the extent that the communicator is, in a kind of strange way, almost restricted.
Yes.
You see, we can only, in a sense, do what we are. I wasn't so permitted to do, which is that not quite exactly what I mean, but it's as if there is a limitation set by the sitter. If the sitter, for instance, is anxious for information of a higher order concerning things appertaining to our life, in other words, if they can raise themselves from the material thoughts and conditions in which they are living in the material world, then of course you can reach them on a different level. You see, so much depends on the sitters, far more than they ever realize. The sitters are the ones who oftentimes restrict the communication. Fortunately, this doesn't apply to you. And we're very grateful they have it, it doesn't. But there are many, many sitters who, unfortunately, if they didn't realize it, spoil their citizens, spoil the communication, limit the communication, so they themselves limit their minds more on a material level, just in trying to raise themselves mentally and spiritually in such a way that the channel between our world and yours is clear of all the aspects of materialism, and then we can open up a channel which is at least a little bit, shall we say, removed from condition to
earth.
It really depends really much more, certainly than people realize, on the conditions in which they get to cry. I would go as far as say they simply get what they deserve.
That's quite right. Yes, quite right.
Of course, you could turn around to me and say, well, since I haven't been getting very much lately, probably I don't deserve anything.
Oh, no, I would never say that.
No, of course you don't.
I wouldn't think of it that way.
No, of course not, and I'm just teasing you.
Yes.
You're something, I mean, you've had such courses in battle. Occasionally, we've been able to do a little, but quite frankly, those conditions have been difficult. I don't have to reiterate all this, you know, don't you?
Yes.
But we have been glad sometimes to take advantage of the power, to what power has been in that time.
I know that.
For you as well.
I don't know that. I know
that. I'm pleased to see you so much better. And now that I think that you're getting better treatment on both sides.
You think so? You like the doctor I have?
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
Oh.
Because after all said and done, if you are mentally happier,
yes.
Mentally, shall we say, more assured that you're getting the right treatment and you're feeling sort of in harmony with the man who's treating you.
Yes.
And that's all obviously very good for you, because there's no getting away from the fact that no matter what a person's material condition may be, no matter what disease or how serious their health may be, if they have faith,
yes.
Whether it is in their particular doctor or doctors, or in the case of spiritualists such as yourself, if you have faith in the communicating entity that's engaging to serve as a help, all this is a very important factor. Apparently, it's very vital.
I like him very much. I just like him.
And I'm sure he's a very good man. He's certainly the right man for you.
Somebody touched me.
Well, that doesn't mean he might stay from his feet out as usual.
Oh.
Thank God, then. We'll keep you picture here. I do that.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that.
Yes, well, I think he's a very good man, and I think, as a matter of fact, I don't think I know that through such a doctor as this man is, that he's sympathetic, very understanding, and to some extent he's psychic. He doesn't probably...
Is he?
Well, probably doesn't know a thing about the subject, of course, but through a man like that, we can go up too, on a more material level in the Vedanta and healing. But of course you've been receiving spiritual healing, psychic healing, the healing of... I've also said the varying kinds is a terrible truth to say this, because I think you're sufficiently aware that there are different forms of healing.
Yes, yes, I know.
There is a very high spiritual kind of healing, which is really more probably spiritual body than it is from the physical body.
Yes.
Then there is this physical healing, which can and is often very beneficial for the patient in the material state. I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when the physical body is sick, it can affect the spiritual body. I don't mean that by that it can necessarily impair it, because
never.
Obviously you cannot impair, certainly not permanently, the spiritual body. But if, as often people are out of sorts, I don't mean just they're not being too good or being deathly, but when they're sort of not in harmony, in other words, when people realize that they have this spiritual body as well as the physical body, if the physical body is out of order, then obviously the spiritual body is not functioning or cannot function as it should do. In other words, there's disharmony. Whether there's disharmony or a disjointing, as it were, between the physical and the spiritual, which can also affect the mental aspects of self, all these things are disorganized. There is this sort of condition which is so affecting, and that the person is not only mentally depressed and mentally concerned and mentally worried, but psychically they're out of tune, and spiritually, no matter how spiritually aware a person may be and how great faith they may have, if there is this sort of disjointing between the physical and the mental and spiritual, so man is much more than just an animal. It's not just physical body, and many people are even not feel that when they are giving treatment or when they are even performing an operation upon a
I hope to goodness I don't have an operation.
No, I'm not suggesting one, I'm not talking about you in that day. I'm talking about generally, I mean if a person has a physical operation, this is not only a shock to the physical body and the nervous system, but it has an impairing effect temporarily.
Yes.
Of disjointing the psychic or spiritual body from the physical. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, you have a person, for instance, who goes under an anesthetic. Now, the whole idea, although doctors have never yet realized this, and maybe a few would like to find it, but this business of an anesthetic and sending a person to sleep, as it were, invariably dissociates the individual, that is, the spirit, from the body.
Yes.
It's a kind of almost, I don't say it is, but it's a kind of temporary death, inasmuch as the entity, which is the individual, is outside the body.
Yes.
And of course, and there are many factors which should help to prove this. I mean, there must be hundreds and hundreds, thousands of instances of men, things in all of that matter, who've lost the limbs.
Yes.
And they've recovered. And they're perfectly all right. And yet, at certain times, they have a sensation in the leg that it doesn't exist.
Yes, I have
heard of it.
Yes.
And this is the psychic, sensitive aspect of self,
yes.
Feeling and sensing. Although the physical leg is no longer there, there's still the spiritual leg, or if you like, the psychic leg, or the spiritual part, which is not affected. But you see, a lot of things that happen, lots of people don't realize this, a lot of people, things that happen, although they happen in a physical sense, it actually must have an effect on the individual mentally, a lot of things that happen can temporarily, and even after a person is fit and well, and the physical body is restored to health, there can be moments, there may be only momentary, and may only last a few minutes, but there is a sensation that people can have of a certain condition which no longer exists. It's a past condition which has forced its way in mentally Oh. And also the fighting part can be the weird thing.
Oh. I
know, it's extremely difficult to make clear what I want to say, because
I understand.
See, I have to try, as you know, there are bring things down onto a certain level so that it can be understood. But until man realizes that he is more than just body, that he is also a spiritual being, that he has this sort of etheric body, it is this etheric body that is aware, that is conscious of pain, that is aware of a sort of being out of tune or out of harmony with the physical body. When a person has a certain complaint or a certain illness, or even if they have an accident, it's as much the psychic body that's consciously aware and sensing and feeling as
it is. They're not feeling, surely.
But in a, yes, in a kind of way, I can't let you say,
oh,
the Buddhist way. It isn't that the psychic body is impaired.
No, no.
But it is
no.
The psychic body that is aware and that is conscious of these things. When a person passes out, the physical body ceases to function. But the etheric body, that is the original, which is the real personality, at least that is the physical body, is the personality intent. That has the full consciousness. That has the complete, as it were, reaction. That is why when people, soon after their passing, they, and have not yet fully left the body, they are aware of the body. They are aware of what has happened to them. They are conscious that they are separate, and yet, in a sense, by a mental process, they are still linked. That is why it doesn't always do, of course, the person to be buried or to be cremated too soon after the passing.
I think about at least three days.
Oh, I think at least three clear full days for the average person. Of course, there again, this depends a lot on the person themselves. Now, in the case of a person who has knowledge of this truth, a person who has had evidence to the extent that they are fully aware when they pass over, that is the physical body of the dead, not themselves. In other words, they can consciously and mentally dissociate themselves almost immediately. That is the joy of this truth.
I hope that happens to me.
Oh, I don't hope about that, my dear. You've got no reason to worry about that at all, because as soon as you cease to exist in the physical thing, you will be immediately aware of the transition. And of course you will be surrounded by people who love you, people who have been waiting for you to join them. And even with people, now you take your late husband, I say late in the physical thing, he had no personal experience with this subject.
No.
At least he had had a sound or something, but he didn't really believe in it. And yet at the same time, in the back of his subconscious mind, was the gnawing, shall I say, the realization of thought of the possibility of it being true. He'd heard you talk about it so often, although he pooh-poohed it. The point was that when he passed over, he was almost immediately conscious of what had happened.
Oh, I'm so cute.
You see, because, you see, in the back of his mind, in the back of his consciousness, was this memory of what he listened to, what he heard, and what he discussed, you know.
I believe he discussed it with his nurse.
Absolutely.
Nurses before he passed over.
You see, we never doubt meaningless, of course, when we're on earth or even over here. And of course, over here we know better, we don't judge anyone. But when we're on earth, we should never form too strong an opinion about a person. We must always, unless we have absolute evidence to substantiate it beyond a shadow of a doubt, we must always give people the benefit of the doubt.
I always realize
there may be extenuating circumstances for why a person says something or why a person does something.
That's right.
And in some instances, of course, often things are done unconsciously, and sometimes, of course, they're done unintentionally, and sometimes they're done in a strange mood which comes upon a person.
And people don't realize that.
We must always try to see that which is good, the fundamental truth in a person. Of course, there are many people whose circumstances, sometimes beyond their control, who say and do things which are totally stupid and detrimental to them, and I think they oftentimes realize that sometimes when it's too late. The point is that there are many people who poo-poo speech, who poo-poo communication, But it isn't necessarily because they altogether disbelieve. It may well be that they would like to believe, but they're afraid.
Yes, yes.
Fear is probably, I would say, one of the greatest enemies of mankind. It's always been the greatest drawback to human progress. One must not have fear in one's nature, because if you fear something, if you have doubts and fear, you will draw these things to you.
Yes.
One must be confident. I know it's not easy in on earth to have confidence. I mean, even sometimes in simple things, if one has faith and one has a confidence that all will be well, whatever it may be, maybe some trivial thing. I'm sure in their millions of years it will be. But you know, a great number of things happen to people which need not happen because they have this strange way of almost, you might say, of attracting something.
Yes.
By fearing something is almost a certain way of attracting it. That's why it's so important to have an open mind.
Yes.
And not to have too many doubts and fears. It's human at times, I know. It's difficult not to have doubts sometimes about this or that or this person or whatever it may be. But if you can say to yourself, well, I'm not going to have any doubts or any fear. I'm going to accept whatever may happen. I'll use my common sense and at the same time realize that common sense isn't always enough. Sometimes it takes uncommon sense to see the truth or to see what is or what is not. You know,
yes.
We must never be too easy to pass judgment, too anxious about judgment.
Oh, I'm not.
I know you're not, but I'm talking like this, not just for your benefit, but because I know that you make good use of these tapes, and there may be people who perhaps may listen to them today.
Yes. Yes, that's
I would say to a person, particularly a person who is unhappy and lonely, who's seeking and doesn't quite know how to go about it or where to seek, but if they will have no fear, if they will open up their mind and their heart to truth, truth will find them. I'm not suggesting that they should not make some effort to find truth. It must be a mutual thing, obviously. But there are so many people who unconsciously and quite foolishly bar the way for comfort and truth and guidance. And they are too proud, or perhaps they're too afeared in some way to ask for guidance or ask for help. But what, if one is seeking truth, one should never stop asking questions. One should never stop seeking a path or a way, even if you have to discard it and find for you it is not the right path. Everyone's path isn't the same. Indeed, one might say that there are some people who find truth in some way and some who find it in another. But the fundamental truth, and this is important, is fundamental truth behind all that is good, all that is lasting, all that is really truth in the highest, purest thing, can and will be found, and it certainly can be found by communication. But we do not suggest that for everybody it is necessary in the right way. I think that there are some people who, perhaps in their own fashion, can find truth in a way which is best for them, not necessarily by becoming spiritualists. In fact, I just like the word spiritualist. I feel that we are all, or should be all aware, and I think the first way to find real truth is to become conscious of the fact that we are, in a sense, dual. We are material and we are spiritual. Or if you like, we are material body and we are etheric body. And it is the spirit that influences the etheric body and the spirit that eventually influences the physical. But of course, if we limit ourselves, as so many people do on our earth, and do not allow the spirit to have access or to function or to show itself or to demonstrate itself, then of course we do go around on the earth in a blind way. We cling to material thoughts, material things. We cannot see beyond only that which is in front of us. We are only clinging to those things that are substantial, as we call it on the earth. But the most substantial things are not of the material world, they're not of the material life. They are the fundamental things which are of the spirit. And once we realize that we are this dual, if you might, than on Earth personality. A dual in as much as we have a material and we have a psychical body, or bodies influenced by spiritual thoughts and ideas. Once they reach out, and they reach out to us and we can reach them, we make a bridge by which we can meet and we can converse and we can help and we can guide. And there are many people in many, many walks of life who, without even knowing it, are being influenced by us, influenced by the power of the Spirit. They may not call themselves spiritualists, they may not know anything about mediumship or communication. It doesn't affect them. They are receiving mentally from us thoughts and impressions and ideas. They are receiving even teachings and philosophy. They are receiving healing power. But in fact, they are being led, without them always being conscious of, into a way of life or into a path of life where they can preserve in the way in which they were probably almost certainly intended in that particular sphere of life and activity. We, of course, would like everyone to know this strength in the fullest sense, because of us working among those who have strength there, who shouldn't have. You see, that the whole part of that proceeds to be for all, that everyone can share in it, that they may not call themselves this or that, but we are all part of each other, we're all influencing. Even you on your side can sometimes influence us. Thank you, sir.
Oh, I don't understand
why that should be. Oh, I don't mean perhaps myself so much.
No.
But what I mean by that is that there are many people who are very good people on your side of life, who are very noble, very fine people. But they may not necessarily be conscious of the fact that they have spiritual or psychic faculties, they may not call themselves
this or that. Oh, I see. Yes, yes.
But their thoughts and their actions, quite unconsciously, to them anyway, do influence earthbound spirits.
Ah, yes, yes. Earthbound.
That's why sometimes we bring souls to selves. And sometimes souls, quite accidentally, you might say, wander, if you like, into an environment. Or into a condition of an individual or individuals on earth, and they are impressed by the thoughts, impressed by the actions of certain people, and it makes them feel that they should likewise, they should take unto themselves something that they've taken or seen in people in on earth.
Yes, yes.
You see, you mustn't almost say or think in any way that all the good people are over here. Of course, there's some very wonderful people on earth. Very extraordinary people on earth who wouldn't know perhaps even anything about spiritualism as such, and yet they are fundamentally remarkable people spiritually. They set examples, they are fully, in a sense you might say, in tune with us, and yet not aware of us.
Yes. Oh yes, I quite believe
that. They are very self-sacrificing, they give themselves completely in their lives to others. And they give so completely that oftentimes materially they are what you would call worn out and tired.
Yes.
And the energy has been drained out of them, but the spiritual vitality is extraordinary. And it is indeed the spiritual vitality that animates many a soul who, perhaps under normal circumstances, would have given up a long time ago and, well, they wouldn't have been able to continue. You see, what we must try to understand about this breakthrough is that it works in reverse, just as much as we can communicate with you and be of service, so in a kind of strange, if you like, kind of way, there can be the people on your side, by the very nature of their being, by the effort that they make, even if they're saying perhaps almost an unconscious effort, because everything springs from the innermost feelings deep down within a human heart. If it comes in that automatic kind of way, because it comes naturally to him to do what he's right, to say what he's right, and to do what is good and God, that is in itself, by its very nature, much better, much more important than some things they do because they feel they should do it. One should always do, and I know it's not always easy, what comes from within one's innermost self, from the natural source, from the natural feeling and desire. Not because you think it's your duty, not because you think, oh, well, I suppose I should do this, or I should do that. You know, we are the same. We come with a great love and a great desire to help humanity, to uplift humanity. to set the path for humanity towards a higher understanding and a better realization of God's will and purpose. But we can't force anyone. We can freedom even would be a good thing to force anyone. We can only guide, we can only show the path, we can only do our best to make a person see, and then it is still for them to tread the path. They are the ones who have got to make the effort. They are the ones who have got to oftentimes remove the material obstacle. We strive to move obstacles out of the path of people that we are endeavouring to help and uplift, but we can't always do things that we would like to do. Sometimes perhaps it will be a good thing for us to do, and sometimes it's part of the plan, I suppose, that individuals should have to break down the barriers themselves in the material world before they can forge ahead and do the things that they feel they're anxious and want to do because they know it is good to do. We often hear people, you know, who say, oh, well, if the spirits are so marvelous and they want us to do this and they want us to do that, then it's up to them to do something for us and clear the path and get rid of the rubbish, as it were. In other words, do this or do that, make it easy for them. He's never promised. I don't think any soul from the side who is honest would ever promise that the path would be easy for those of you now on earth who want to do things of a spiritual nature. Because the more spiritually inclined you become when you're on earth, the more spiritually conscious and aware you become, the more all around you seems, by its very nature of being material, more difficult, more like a brick wall which you've got to keep banging up against and still seem to make little or no progress. In other words, it seems to me that the more one progresses on earth, the more difficult the material life must seem in comparison. We've never suggested that the path would be made easy. It's true that we do our best, that we try to remove obstacles and barriers, we try to make it a little easier, because we know that the person who is then is striving to do good and to help others and to uplift others. And naturally it is for the benefit of all to relieve and if possible to destroy obstacles which stand in the way. But it doesn't alter the fact that when those obstacles sometimes are human beings who are still on earth, who still have their own free will, who of their own accord make things difficult or stand in the way in some shape or form, we cannot just force things, we cannot force people to do anything. We can only cajole them, we can only try to guide them and help them and try to appeal to their better nature and to appeal to the finer instincts within them that they may of their own free will make the effort. And then we can cooperate, then we can go ahead. You see, people don't realize those spiritualists who profess to know so much often know so little. They should know much more than they do, but if they don't know very much, it's because they themselves have restricted the communication. They have not sought the realities that we try to give them. They're content with the frivolities, they're content with the things that are little value, which please them temporarily, and then they want more proof, more evidence, then they want this little thing to happen, or that little thing to happen. They go to mediums seeking material advice and material guidance, they go to seances and they want to see dolls flying about and tambourine and banging, and all the rest of it. These things have their place, I don't deny that. For the purposes they serve, they are useful. For so many mediums, for so many sitters, so many spiritual, so many mediums, for that matter, stay on a very low level, which doesn't really do them any good. In fact, one might almost say they'd be better than likely. You see, Rose, over the years we've learned, we've realized the vital truth, the spiritual life, the vital truth, the life eternal, and all that that entails. And it's so tremendous, so vast, so vital, so strong, so powerful. We want to get it over to the earth, but we are so limited by the thoughts and the individuals, the limited realizations that they have of this truth. We can't reach people until they make the attempt to reach out. And that's where the problem is. The many spiritualists don't make much progress because they limit themselves. They are quite content to, as it were, just be on the fringe of truth.
Yes, yes. Yes, you're quite right, Doctor.
Anyway, Rose, it always gives me joy and pleasure to come and talk to you, because I do know from many years' experience of coming through the earth talking to you that your main interest is to gather as much knowledge and experience as you can, which will not only benefit you but benefit others.
Yes.
And that gives me great pleasure and great joy, and that's one reason why we try to keep you going as long as we can. we can serve and we can work and we can help in that direction. Mm. And another reason why we've been rather disappointed actually, because we haven't been outside the context and we'd like various reasons, as you know, health chief is important, and we've had to try and get the medium as fit as we can, and he does still too much, of course, but we can't bring him about it. We know the situation is different. But we are hoping and praying that yes, we can serve and we can work and we can help in that direction. Mm. And another reason why we've been rather disappointed actually, because we haven't been able to make the context and we'd like various reasons, as you know, health chief has been the cause, and we've had to try and get the medium as fit as we can, and he does still too much, of course, but we can't bring him about it. We know the situation is different. But we are hoping and praying that in the not too far distant future, we should be able to spend more time, more effort, more power to be used for communication of the kind of order which you enjoy and which is helpful and will be helpful to many people, rather than wasting on a lot of the trivialities that people expect of us. Sometimes we come here and we take one look and we say, no, sorry, I'm doing it today. But we have our reasons, because we know the motives of some of these people. It is purely material.
Yes.
And we can't be bothered. I'm getting to the point now where I just can't be bothered. If I come here and I see that the whole setup is a material one, and the individuals that have come here have really come on a very material low basis, and I just say to Mickey, look, boy, nothing doing. We're not going to bother. And we just say, sorry, friends, can't do anything. Of course, we could, but we're no attention.
Oh, good for you, Doctor, dear.
I don't think that applies to you, you don't. I mean, when we come through and say, sorry, Rose, it's because we have been with them.
Yes,
and
I know.
Because of health conditions and because we spent a lot of time over the last few months trying to help you and help the medium, and also because we wanted the conditions to be right so that we could do really good work. We didn't want to waste time, we didn't want to waste power. We want to use it to the best advantage of all concerned, and sometimes it's been much more essential to look after your physical health, because that is very important, and it's certainly important to us in the media, because really here the taxes and so, and we have to do what we can to keep it going.
Yes.
And as I said to you before, the winter's coming on, and we've got to work doubly hard to keep it going, but I'm sure we'll be all right. I just want you to know that whatever may transpire, always know that we are doing our best. Sometimes things may not turn out as one would wish. Sometimes things that we've hoped for, just as much as you have, haven't come off, they haven't come out as we'd anticipated or hoped. But remember, we've had to work often against frustrating conditions. People even on your side, and when you're trying to do something which has a material basis, in as much that to do certain things you've had to consider material things, we know the problems, we know that you will. We can do our best to help you, but we can't necessarily always even fulfill the things we would like to fulfill. But we always go on striving. We have faith, though, isn't it? You've got faith, thank God. And between us, faith will overcome all the obstacles. It's just a matter of time and patience.
Yes.
Anyway, Rose, don't you now come and give me a jolly good old lecture, because
no, I'm loving
talking to you as I have talked to you tonight. I'm thinking not quite so much of you as possibly others who may make use of the tape, as you call it, so that others can hear my message, because I think this is a message that applies to all those who profess to be speaking. If they want to find truth, then they've got to make the effort, and they've not got to be satisfied just with the low mundane plane, which so many people do seem to link up with. Anyone can get onto that vibration. It's getting onto a higher vibration that means progress.
Yes, that's right. I wonder why you have given this wonderful speech tonight.
Oh, for various reasons, because I know you make jolly good use of it, and you'll play it to the people who ought to be hearing it, who just go dithering around from medium to medium, the sounds to sounds, and they think they know all the answers, they think they know the whole subject from A to Z, and really they haven't even grasped the beginning. They don't know the ABC, and the Z. Anyway, I'm going. God bless.
Thank you, Dr. Darling.
Bye-bye, my dear. And don't worry. Have faith.
Yes, of course.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, darling. Oh, I've had such hurt and lovely things about you.
About me? Where?
Not you.
Oh. Pencil.
Oh.